Random House Audio Assets presents The Warren Buffett Way, Second Edition, by Robert G. Hagstrom. Read for you by Stefan Rudnicki. Every year, Forbes magazine publishes a list of the 400 richest people in America, the very elite Forbes 400. Individuals on the list come and go from year to year as their personal circumstances change and their industries rise and fall. But some names are constant. Among those leading the list, year in and year out, are certain mega billionaires who trace their wealth to a product, computer software or hardware, a service, retailing, or lucky parentage, inheritance. Of those perennially in the top five, only one made his fortune through investment savvy. That one person is Warren Buffett. In the early 1990s, he was number one. Then, for a few years, he seesawed between number one and number two with a youngster named Bill Gates. Even for the dot-com crazed year 2000, when so much of the wealth represented by the Forbes 400 came from the phenomenal growth in the technology area, Buffett, who smilingly eschews high-tech anything, was firmly in fourth position. Still, the only person in the top five for whom the source of wealth column reads stock market. In 2004, he was solidly back in the number two position. In 1956, Buffett started his investment partnership with $100. After 13 years, he cashed out with $25 million. At the time of this writing, mid-2004, his personal net worth has increased to $42.9 billion. The stock in his company is selling at $92,900 a share, and literally millions of investors around the world hang on his every word. To fully appreciate Warren Buffett, however, we have to go beyond the dollars, the performance accolades, and the reputation. Warren Edward Buffett was born August 30, 1930, in Omaha, Nebraska. His grandfather owned a grocery store and once employed a young Charlie Munger. His father was a local stockbroker. As a boy, Warren Buffett was always fascinated with numbers and could easily do complex mathematical calculations in his head. At age 8, he began reading his father's books on the stock market. At age 11, he marked the board at the brokerage house where his father worked. His early years were enlivened with a succession of entrepreneurial ventures, and he was so successful that he told his father he wanted to skip college and go directly into business. He was overruled. Buffett attended the business school at the University of Nebraska, and while there, read a new book on investing by a Columbia professor named Benjamin Graham. It was, of course, The Intelligent Investor. Buffett was so taken with Graham's ideas that he applied to Columbia Business School so that he could study directly with Graham. Bill Ruane, now chairman of the Sequoia Fund, was in the same class. He recalls that there was an instantaneous mental chemistry between Graham and Buffett, and that the rest of the class was primarily an audience. Not long after Buffett graduated from Columbia with a master's degree in economics, Graham invited his former student to join his company, the Graham Newman Corporation. During his two-year tenure there, Buffett became fully immersed in his mentor's investment approach. Then, in 1956, Graham Newman disbanded. Graham, then 61, decided to retire. Buffett returned to Omaha. Armed with the knowledge he had acquired from Graham, with the financial backing of family and friends, and with $100 of his own money, Buffett began a limited investment partnership. He was 25 years old. The partnership began with seven limited partners who together contributed $105,000. The limited partners received 6% annually on their investment and 75% of the profits above this bogey. The remaining 25% went to Buffett, who as general partner had essentially free rein to invest the partnership's funds. Over the next 13 years, Buffett compounded money at an annual rate of 29.5%. It was no easy task. Although the Dow Jones Industrial Average declined in price 5 different years in that 13-year period, Buffett's partnership never had a down year. Buffett, in fact, had begun the partnership with the very ambitious goal of outperforming the Dow by 10 points every year. And he did it. Not by 10 points, but 22. As Buffett's reputation grew, more people asked him to manage their money. For the partnership, Buffett bought controlling interests in several public and private companies, and in 1962 he began buying shares in an ailing textile company called Berkshire Hathaway. That same year, 1962, Buffett moved the partnership office from his home to Kiewit Plaza in Omaha, where his office remains today. The next year, he made a stunning purchase. Tainted by a scandal involving one of its clients, American Express saw its shares drop from $65 to $35 almost overnight. Buffett had learned Ben Graham's lesson well. When stocks of a strong company are selling below their intrinsic value, act decisively. Buffett made the very bold decision to put 40% of the partnership's total assets, $13 million, into American Express stock. Over the next 2 years, the shares tripled in price, and the partners netted a cool $20 million in profit. It was pure Graham and pure Buffett. By 1965, the partnership's assets had grown to $26 million. 4 years later, explaining that he found the market highly speculative and worthwhile values increasingly scarce, Buffett decided to end the investment partnership. When the partnership disbanded, investors received their proportional interests. Some of them, at Buffett's recommendation, sought out money manager Bill Ruane, his old classmate at Columbia. Ruane agreed to manage their money, and thus was born the Sequoia Fund. Others, including Buffett, invested their partnership revenues in Berkshire Hathaway. By that point, Buffett's share of the partnership had grown to $25 million, and that was enough to give him control of Berkshire Hathaway. What he did with it is well known in the investment world. Even those with only a passing interest in the stock market recognize Buffett's name and know something of his stunning success. In the following, we will trace the upward trajectory of Berkshire Hathaway in the 40 years that Buffett has been in control. Perhaps more important, we will also look beneath the surface to uncover the commonsensical philosophy on which his success is founded. Warren Buffett is not easy to describe. Physically, he is unremarkable, with looks often described as grandfatherly. Intellectually, he is considered a genius, yet his down-to-earth relationship with people is truly uncomplicated. He is simple, straightforward, forthright, and honest. He displays an engaging combination of sophisticated dry wit and cornball humor. He has a profound reverence for all things logical and a foul distaste for imbecility. He embraces the simple and avoids the complicated. Reading Berkshire's annual reports, one is struck by how comfortable Buffett is quoting the Bible, John Maynard Keynes, or Mae West. Of course, the operable word is reading. Each report is 60 to 70 pages of dense information. No pictures, no color graphics, no charts. Those who are disciplined enough to start on page one and continue uninterrupted are rewarded with a healthy dose of financial acumen, folksy humor, and unabashed honesty. Buffett is very candid in his reporting. He emphasizes both the pluses and the minuses of Berkshire's businesses. He believes that people who own stock in Berkshire Hathaway are owners of the company, and he tells them as much as he would like to be told if he were in their shoes. When Buffett took control of Berkshire, the corporate net worth was $22 million. 40 years later, it has grown to $69 billion. It has long been Buffett's goal to increase the book value of Berkshire Hathaway at a 15% annual rate, well above the return achieved by the average American company.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?